In the 10 years between 1995 and 2005, employment in North Carolina's textile and apparel plants declined by more than 60%. Most of the manufacturing jobs were sent overseas, where labor is cheaper. The restructuring of the textile industry has been devastating to the state's textile workers, but some say the industry as a whole hasn't gasped its last breath yet. Joining me on the phone now to tell us more about the state of North Carolina's textile industry is Nancy Castle. She's a professor in the College of Textiles at North Carolina State University and has recently completed a research project that captures what the industry looks like now and how much it's contributing to North Carolina's economy. Nancy Castle, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you very much. I appreciate having this program related to the restructuring and the opportunities for the North Carolina textile industry.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. More than 750 textile and apparel mills closed since 95 in the state. Is textiles still a viable industry in North Carolina?
Yes, textiles is very much a viable industry in North Carolina. We have, in fact, seen the production declines. However, our recent study that we conducted in the summer of 2006 has found that textiles is not only viable, we have in excess of over 1,500 companies that are conducting business related to textiles. In North Carolina, 90 out of the 100 counties in our state have some participation or involvement in terms of the textile industry. And our approximate sales of the textile industry in North Carolina exceeds $35 billion within the last year. And again, this is an approximate because we have several privately held companies that are part of this industry.
So there are a lot of companies now still in the business, but what about the jobs, the number of workers employed in that industry?
We have, as the press has reported and as you mentioned, we have seen production declines in terms of employment. However, what we have seen are really two key dimensions. Some of that production, yes, has shifted to offshore, as another group will be talking about in terms of sourcing. But what has also happened is that many of our companies in North Carolina have shifted from the production orientation to more of a what we'll call pre-production and post-production operations. So we still employ in excess of over 121,000 people in the textile complex, but they may be involved in design, development, sourcing, logistics, marketing, and merchandising operations.
And are those generally better paying jobs?
In general, they are more, they are better or higher paying jobs than traditionally we have found in terms of the production employment.
Does North Carolina have a competitive advantage in some of these areas, and can it hold that advantage? You know, I'm trying to figure out what it is that will keep North Carolina competitive and why foreign, you know, production people or marketing people can't take those jobs, too.
Okay. Well, let me talk to you and share where I believe there are some competitive advantages, not only today, but in the future. First of all, we still have a traditional manufacturing textile industry in North Carolina. However, several of our manufacturers are using a blended sourcing option in terms of manufacturing in the U.S. as well as other sites around the world. And they're doing this not only for cost reasons, but also for expertise reasons that other countries can provide. We do have world leaders in the manufacturing. You look at companies like Parkdale, Frontier, International Textile Group, and these companies are still maintaining a manufacturing presence in the United States as well as in other locations. However, there are some other profiles that have emerged over the last few years that are very exciting. Some of our companies in North Carolina are pursuing new business models, and these relate very much in terms of sourcing and branding models. For example, VF Corporation, which is headquartered in Greensboro, North Carolina, but is the world's largest apparel company, currently does not do any manufacturing in North Carolina and limited in the United States. Yet what they have done, they are a company in excess of $6.5 billion, and they have become very aggressive and have grown considerably due to their branding strategies and the acquisition of companies, their sourcing, and then also providing the customer with the product that they want.
So there is an industry in North Carolina, a textile industry. It is making money, but that still doesn't account for the total number of workers and the net loss of jobs in the state during that shakeout. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the human side at this moment. Joining us now as part of our continuing collaboration with Patrick Conway's Economics of North Carolina class at UNC Chapel Hill are two students who've been looking at the aftermath of plant closures in North Carolina. They are Hannah Standish and Peter Bonds. Hannah and Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. You visited Perry Manufacturing Plant in Mount Airy. What business owners, what did they say there about laid-off employees?
Well, we visited Perry in Mount Airy, North Carolina, and it was interesting to see what their side of the story was when they were talking about laid-off workers as compared to when you heard the story from the workers themselves. Perry told us that they had tracked their workers who they had laid off for 6 months afterwards, and that 90% of them were reemployed somewhere. But what they don't tell you is that these workers are not making nearly as much money as they were while they're working for textile companies. In fact, the actual wages are significantly lower. While the average textile worker in North Carolina in the year 2002 was making $26,300, and after finding a new job after being laid off, the average reemployment wage was $14,140.
It's a big drop. And there were retraining programs, too, that were going to be part of this restructuring, Hannah, that were going to help workers find jobs so that they could continue to make a living wage. And you looked at those. How effective were they?
Well, I think that depends on what stance you're looking at. For example, from the company's point of view, seeing these workers who are reemployed and who do have new jobs, they would say that the programs are pretty effective. But from the workers' point of view, who are making, again, significantly lower incomes, the programs haven't done nearly enough for them. The state, I believe their goal was to go in and to provide these people with other options, with retraining programs, with supplemental incomes for a period of time. And the state has done that and kind of helped these people get back on their feet.
Peter, you talked to former Pilatex employees. You talked to one in particular who was laid off for 30 years. What happened to him?
Well, he had started working at Pilatex in 1970 at an entry-level position. He never finished high school, as a matter of fact. And he worked there for 33 years and worked his way up to becoming a human resources manager. And in 2003, he was told that he was going to lose his job along with everyone else at Pilatex. And it devastated his life and his family. He took advantage of the job retraining that was paid for in part by Pilatex and in part by the state, and floated his resume around. During this year, he was at community college, and he says he couldn't find anything that would pay as much as his job at Pilatex, and that no one in his area in Kannapolis, Salisbury, was offering nearly as much money or benefits.
Hannah, what did you find out about what people got in terms of severance or pension? Were they able to keep much for their years of service to the various companies that they had worked for?
Well, really what I covered were programs that the state implemented to help these people get new jobs. The Trade Adjustment Assistance Act is one very prominent program that retrains displaced workers.
Did it also offer any kind of compensation in the period that they were looking for jobs or being retrained?
Yes, it did do that.
Yeah. And how did the folks feel about that? Did they feel that was enough? Were they able to support themselves while they were going through retraining?
Well, it definitely wasn't enough nearly to compensate for the income that they were making. It paid a percentage of it based on what their previous income for, I believe, a period of 104 weeks. And it came into effect after their unemployment insurance ran out.
And actually, after being laid off, Pilatex kept track of its employees, and they conducted a survey. And after 1 month of being laid off, 43% of their workers reported that they were behind in paying their rent and their mortgage, and they weren't getting nearly enough money from unemployment benefits from the state to sustain how they'd been living. Another 93% said they could not afford health insurance any longer.
I wanted to step back and ask Nancy Castle a big picture question, and it certainly doesn't address any of the needs that workers who are laid off and are finding it difficult to pay their rent and make other payments. But in the big picture, Nancy Castle, does the trade-off between higher-paying jobs and fewer of them help the economy of North Carolina, or does the fact that all these other workers, a larger number who are unemployed and now need assistance, how does that drain on the economy compare to the boost given by the restructuring in the industry here in North Carolina?
Well, I do not have the economic statistics really to answer from an economic point of view. What I can say to you is, in fact, with this restructuring of the industry, the industry is surviving with fewer companies, which is recognized. And again, there have been some job losses, but these companies are in some cases much more successful than they have been in the past. And so their contributions to the individual communities that they represent continues to be strong and to provide opportunities not only within the community but also the economic benefit within the state of North Carolina.
Well, I want to ask Peter a question here, and that is, how do you think outsourcing of jobs, the people who lost their jobs, how does that affect people like you and me who don't work in that sector?
Well, the outsourcing of textile manufacturing jobs from North Carolina has really devastated local communities. It's not just the people who lose their jobs who are suffering, but it's the entire community. And this is something that I really looked at. And I studied Robeson County and the effects of those job losses on the county and the area as a whole. And what I found that there was a report done by the North Carolina Sociological Association, and there were 8,708 manufacturing jobs lost between 1993 and 2003. And there's a study done that suggests that those job losses in turn were responsible for 18,345 additional job losses in other sections of the economy.
So there are lots of different ways to measure economic impact, and you as young students in economics now know it's a pretty complex picture and a lot of different ways to cut it and a lot of different ways to express the outcomes of these various trends in our economy. I want to thank all of you for being with us. Hannah Standish and Peter Bonds, freshmen at UNC Chapel Hill. Nancy Castle, a professor in the College of Textiles at North Carolina State University. Thank you all for being with us. Coming up next, the music of Triad Stage's holiday production, Beautiful Star. Stay tuned.